Hello and welcome back to the Bowles Rice West Virginia Educast, an education law podcast where we're discussing hot legal topics that affect the West Virginia education system. I'm your host, Trey Marone. Today we're discussing a hot topic of late in education, local control, and we'll be looking at the issue from a state level perspective with our special guest, Heather Hutchins. Heather serves as general counsel for the West Virginia Department of Education. Her office provides legal services to the state superintendent of schools and the state board of education, and it is also responsible for human resources and accountability measures. Heather Hutchins has been with the Department of Education for over 20 years. This is part of a two-part episode on local control. I want to do it in two parts so we can give the perspective of local control from both the county board level and the state board level. I spoke to Dr. Howard O'Cole to get a perspective on local control from the county board level, and I'm excited to hear from you regarding the perspective from the state level. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on this podcast. I'm actually really excited about this topic and really excited about the podcast in general. I can't wait to see what comes next. Having had the opportunity to work now, as you pointed out, for over 20 years with our State Board of Education, state superintendents, and also in that role with county boards of education, this is an issue that comes up often and has come up often over those 20 years. But it seems you're exactly right, like it's been on everyone's mind even a little more lately.
Exactly. You know, local control is not a new topic, as you know, and you've been around the state board for a long time, and I'm sure you've seen, you know, other situations over the last two decades where there's been a lot of focus or attention on the state board or decisions that are being made that are coming from the state level that might impact counties, but probably nothing ever as loud, so to speak, or under the spotlight, I guess, is maybe a way to say what we've experienced in the last year, and more specifically here in the last month on the issue of local control. But that being said, let's just dive right in. You know, with the West Virginia State School Board being tasked with the oversight of all the K through 12 public schools, you know, in the entire state, how does the state board balance that role against the desire of county boards to have local control over those public schools within their districts?
I think it's a great question to start with. And, you know, I think it's interesting that these issues become hot topics and are at the forefront of everyone's mind, typically after an issue where there's been a conflict, where someone at the local level has thought, well, that's not something that I wanted to do. I want to have local control. And certainly, county board members have a great deal of autonomy and control. But as you pointed out, there is a balancing test. The thing that I want to always say to people is that in that balancing test, that the primary goal is to do what's right for kids, to do what's best for kids, to have a system of checks and balances. And that's with county, with the county board, with the legislature, and with even the federal government on some issues impacting our schools. But it's not a turf war. It's really a collaborative, working together type relationship that has fairly defined roles, not always easily defined, but fairly defined roles that all work together toward the common goal in the end, and that's providing a thorough and efficient system of free public schools for the students of our state.
You know, those are great points. And I think that, you know, it might be worth taking a moment to just kind of have a little bit of a refresher on, you know, the function of the state school board. You know, where does that come from? I mean, what is the actual, you know, authority under which the state board, you know, operates? Could you kind of give us some background on that?
Sure, absolutely. In understanding the state board's role, the primary place that we look is back to the Constitution of the state of West Virginia, not the federal constitution, but our state constitution. And a number of years ago, I believe back in the 1950s, the voters of the state of West Virginia had a constitutional amendment and determined that the supervision, general supervision of free schools should be vested with the State Board of Education, who chooses the state superintendent of schools. The State Board of Education is primarily charged through those words in the Constitution with the duty of ensuring that the goals of quality and equality are achieved for all children. And that's a really, really high and important goal in looking across a state, really varied levels of wealth, varied geographies, various industries and backgrounds. But the state board's role is to make sure that every kid, no matter where those kids come from, can walk into a school and receive a good public education.
And, you know, that constitutional basis for that, I mean, that's pretty high up on the ladder, isn't it? I mean, the Constitution of the state of West Virginia. Thanks for that. So we've talked about this relationship between the state constitution and the state board of education and, you know, where, you know, how that kind of fits in. You know, that's one thing. But how does the West Virginia legislature fit into the picture? You know, we know that every year the legislature enacts laws that impact public education. Is that legislative action also tied to the state constitution?
Actually, it is. The Constitution provides that the State Board of Education shall have general supervision over the public schools of the state, but also provides that the legislature shall provide for a thorough and efficient education. So there are roles for both. The legislature's role is vital and is a vital partner along with the State Board in making sure that we do have that thorough and efficient system of schools that's equal for all of our students. Particularly, the legislature has a very difficult job in implementing its duties under the Thorough and Efficient Clause in providing the funding for public education. And that is a role that is very distinct to the legislature and is not a role that either the state board or county boards of education play a role in. So when we are looking at how we all work together, we all have certain parameters. And again, it's a system of checks and balances moving forward.
Excellent. Okay, so let's talk about the you know, just for a second. I know we're getting the state board perspective from you, but let's talk for just a second about the county boards, you know, at the local level before we go into the issue of local control. How are the county boards created?
County boards of education were created by acts of the legislature. So we're almost looking at kind of a tiered level. There's the Constitution, which provides for the state board's general supervision, the legislature's responsibility to provide a thorough and efficient system of public schools, and the legislature then has the authority to enact a number of laws regarding the structure of public education, and in enacting that, have created county boards of education and provide how county board of education members are elected and a number of the duties that are given to county boards. In fact, all of the duties that are given to county boards of education derive from statute and acts of the legislature.
So, you know, and sometimes, you know, the state legislature enacts laws that trigger the state board to enact policies. And you have, you know, several policies, obviously, as a state board. And then sometimes those trickle down and require county boards to actually have policies as well. So basically, you're saying that these, you know, the county boards of education are creatures of statute, that they're kind of roles and responsibilities flow from those statutes. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it is correct that the legislature does promulgate laws that define the roles and responsibilities of county boards of education and the types of authority and control that they do have. We often say that statutorily created entities have the authority that is given to them by statute. So that's a unique role for county boards of education. That does tie back, however, also to the roles of county board of education do tie back to the state board's role of general supervision. The state board carries out that role primarily by enacting policies. And policies of the state board of education define things, think about things that happen in the classrooms, that the education, the learning side of education. The legislature and its thorough and efficient side go more towards the financial and accountability sides for education. And then county boards of education have both the statutes promulgated by the legislature and the rules of the state board, and they get the difficult and important job of sorting out all of those details and how those things are going to look in their individual counties in a way that works best for their students and their citizens.
And kind of turning it, you know, to local control, you know, we've talked about state Well, first, let me clarify. There's no constitutional provision that even talks about county boards of education, correct?
That's correct. They're not created in the Constitution in any way, or nor given any defined roles constitutionally. Okay.
So, and turning back to the legislative, you know, code provisions that the legislature enacts and the policies that may flow from that at the state and the local level. So, you know, given the state board's role of oversight, what kind of local control do county boards have? I mean, what is it that they can do that it would be considered local control?
And I said that counties have quite a responsibility in sorting out and implementing all of the directives of the legislature and the State Board of Education. I meant that rather sincerely, that there are a lot of details that they have to sort out. Let's look at a couple of simple examples. The legislature, in providing for a thorough and efficient education, has said that there will be a minimum instructional term for students of 180 days and a minimum employment term for teachers of 200 days. But when that calendar starts, when it ends, whether or not there's going to be a spring break, how the school day is structured, is all determined at the local level. And that can look different from county to county based on the needs of those individuals. Of course, one of the things we hear every year is that the folks down in Greenbrier County have rather specific needs because of the importance of the state fair. And their calendar is going to look a little bit different in order to allow accommodation for that activity than the calendar maybe next door in Monroe County. Looking at what actually happens in our classrooms, which is really, you know, what we all think of when we think of schools and why we're all here to begin with, the state board, in looking at all of its students and ensuring that all students in the state are taught content standards and meet graduation requirements that will enable them to move effectively into the workforce or into higher education, do set that minimum content standards that must be taught. But the content standard, the goals, how a county meets those goals in individual classrooms and through initiatives that may be done on a countywide level are determined by the county board and the county superintendent. So it's really the essence of those things, how all of these broad goals and requirements are unfolding in the details happens at the county board level.
Well, and you know, as you know, I used to be a county board member, a county board president, and you know, we made decisions every day or every meeting, I should say, that were decisions that we thought were, you know, best for our county. The kind of the boundaries of making those decisions may have been established by state code or state board policy, but once those parameters were set, we had a lot of discretion, you know, within those parameters to make decisions. And isn't that in essence local control, you know, over decision making?
It is the very essence of local control. And your analogy, I think, was perfect. You have boundaries within which a county has to operate. You have to color within the lines. Yeah. But the colors that you use, the patterns that you use, are all issues that can be determined locally. And that is really important because our state is very geographically diverse. It is very economically diverse. The individuals in Morgantown and Monongalia County, where we have West Virginia University, may look very different than Doddridge County, where we don't have the same type of infrastructure and industry. So that the way that we have structured the levels of authority enable a county board to sort out those details in a way that works best for them.
Absolutely. Well, you know, as we've kind of touched on, but let's get deeper into it. Recently, the issue of local control really moved front and center here in West Virginia. You know, the governor, as I would characterize it, essentially lifted his order closing public school buildings. And the spotlight then shifted to boards of education on the method of delivery of instruction. And I say that because it really, you know, we have the state board and the local boards, but it shifted, you know, and all the attention was now on the boards of education on how that was going to play out. And that's kind of where there became this disagreement, if you will, or potential, not across the state. I know there was a number of counties that disagreed with the way the state board believed that this transition should take place. And it seemed like some of the counties strongly advocated that they felt like they should have direct control over decision-making in that situation. So what happened there? I mean, can you explain how that actually happened? I mean, like what was the kind of the detail there?
Absolutely. And this example of whether or not counties were going to offer in-person instruction or activate full countywide remote learning in response to the COVID pandemic is a perfect example to illustrate these layers of authority. As I started out by saying, the state board's constitutional charge of general supervision is primarily centered on those issues of quality and equality for all students in the state. When the governor's order was lifted, the state board and state superintendent, having monitored the situation throughout the COVID crisis, learned a lot, as we all did, about what was happening to our students and happening in our classrooms. They heard from our state health officials that it was safe to be in classrooms, that COVID transmission in classrooms was very low, did not correlate to community transmission. That's why the governor lifted his order. We also knew, in looking at data, that for a number of students in our state who did not have access to remote learning, because they did not have access to broadband or internet. The type of remote learning they would get was a paper and pencil packet sent home sometimes once a week by a bus driver, maybe no connection with the teacher at all. Even for students who live in areas where they do have better access, we saw that failure rates were increasing. Social and emotional issues were suffering. The mental health of students was suffering. So the state board looked at all of these factors, knew what its parameters were constitutionally, had a meeting where they discussed at length what was going to be required. The state board could have said, we're going to let county boards determine on their own, but believed that the issue of in-person instruction and offering in-person instruction was so vital to the success of our students and to giving that equal quality education to all of our students, the state board determined in a motion to require all counties to implement in-person learning, at least on a blended model. I do think it's important to point out that there, even within that directive, was some latitude as to how the counties would implement in-person learning.
Well, you know, it sounds like, I mean, I've heard you, that's, you know, you've really shed some light on that. And I hear things like equity and access coming out, that seemed to be kind of like the focus of the state board, recognizing its responsibility to the students throughout the entire state and making sure that education, the educational directive was carried out in terms of equity and access. Is that fair? Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
I think that is absolutely fair. And that the ideas of equity and access and the goals of equity and access and quality are the drive all of the state board's decisions. And as we've seen with the COVID pandemic, these are things that happen in real life. They're not just academic conversations. These actually occur. The reason we got to where we are with sorting out the differences of levels of authority with the legislature and the state board and county boards stemmed from some cases back in the 70s that actually were litigated for years, for over 20 years, where lawsuits were brought because students in some counties did not have enough money to provide a good education for their students. They had poor facilities, did not have access to rich course offerings, whereas students in other counties that may have had more money were able to do. So the entire structure of our system, as defined by our courts and our constitution, are to make sure that we don't leave any of our kids out. And that's when the state board acts, that's really at the backdrop of all of their decisions, making sure that all of our kids have that even level playing field to give them what they need to succeed and move forward.
Thank you. When the state board, you know, is going to consider a policy for adoption, it goes out for comment. You know, when the legislature is considering legislation that might impact education, you know, there's bills presented, there's lobbyists at work, there's all these things going on that really give the public or even, you know, local counties can come up to board meetings or send in comments about things and decisions that were being made. So they have some input, you know, in those two aspects. You know, this situation here, of course, it's been kind of going on for a year, but it came to kind of a head, if you will, when the governor lifted his order about closing public school buildings. And it seemed like, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of time there for people to really kind of kind of get on their platform and speak their piece, because, you know, we're in a pandemic. I mean, this is an unprecedented time. So let me just sum it up this way, because I know you and I could keep, we're going to have to probably wrap it up here. But if a county board of education disagrees with action taken or proposed by the state board of education, what can or should the county board do? What's the proper, you know, approach there?
You made a couple great points in leading up to that question, in that the state board doesn't act in isolation. The state superintendent is out in counties, talking to county superintendents, getting that input regularly. And the public comment process for policies is really important. Everyone out there that has an opinion should submit that comment, because as somebody who helps write policies, I can tell you every comment is reviewed and every comment has a response given to it. So please do that. That's a really important voice. But if a policy is passed and a county thinks this isn't working for us, there are still some avenues for latitude. Counties can, one, just sort of talk and understand and make sure that they know where they actually do have latitude, as with the blended learning option recently when returning to in-person instruction. But also, there's a waiver process. And there are different ways that waivers can make to the state superintendent and to the state board. A county may determine that graduation requirement says that I have to teach this type of math, but we think that a different course can be substituted, and here's evidence as to how we think it's going to work, and here's buy-in from our community. The state board will consider and very routinely grants waivers that are well thought out, researched issues presented by county. So counties still have, even with the state board's policy making process, options to talk about what they need and to make the best decisions for their own students.
Heather, it's been a pleasure to have you on today's program. You've given us some great insight into, you know, things from the state level perspective. When my colleagues and I were just initially talking about doing this podcast episode on local control, we just thought it was vitally important to discuss the topic from the viewpoints of both the local level and the state level. So so much appreciate your time today, and thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. I very much enjoyed it, and can't wait to hear the next podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking your time to be our guest today. Be sure and join us next time as we continue our discussion of important legal topics in public education.